Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Lit Publishing's podcast, Lit Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today's show. With me today is Hilary Gallo. How are you today?
I'm very good, Miro.
It's great to have you here on the podcast, and thank you for taking the time to join us today. And of course, for our listeners, Hilary is a lawyer, coach, and negotiation expert who has worked with a multitude of worldwide clients, including Capgemini, Anderson Consulting, and the BBC. He holds retreats for executives looking to change the way they approach work and life. He is a trained mediator and runs confidence-building workshops. He is also an author, and we're very happy to have him today here on the podcast. And the question I would like to start off with, Hilary, is the one I get every author here on the podcast to answer, and that is, what inspired you to become an author, and can you tell us a bit about the book as well?
Yeah, I think I've always been interested in words as a creative tool. And I left my corporate life some 5 years ago, and I kind of had an itch, a frustration about negotiation, because throughout the period I'd been a lawyer originally, and I'd learnt by trial and error how to negotiate. And I started off being a bit of an alpha male, a bit aggressive, a bit unfriendly, very loyally. And that didn't work for me. And I went on this journey and I changed and became a very different sort of negotiator by the end, particularly. But what interested me when I left corporate life is that although the teams around me understood why that was an advantage, particularly the sales and the bid teams, because I was working in big outsourcing negotiations, the majority of the company didn't, particularly the very senior management. My boss got it, but the CEO didn't. And I kind of realised it was a societal problem that, as a whole, people still thought that strong-arm tactics were the best way to negotiate. And I'd found out for myself that it wasn't like that. I'd found out that it wasn't true for a lot of people who learned how to negotiate properly. All the best negotiators are very thoughtful and open and flexible, and they're good listeners. And so I decided I wanted to write about it. I wanted to investigate really what was going on here, philosophically as well as a skill set, and to write about that and to do something about it. And that's how The Power of Soft was born.
Great. And let's focus a bit on that, because the Power of Soft is a very central part of the book and on a lot of the themes and ideas that you talk about. Can you give us a brief overview of what the Power of Soft actually is, and how come it became so important in the long run?
Yeah, that's a very good question. The thing people tend to focus on when they see the title and the cover and they hear The Power of Soft is the soft. And my point is that I think we polarise too much. I think we polarise. It's a sort of left and right choice that we make as bipedal, two-handed beings. And the central contention is it's not about being hard or soft. What I'm saying in the book is that if you're too soft, you will get run over in today's world. This is not just about being soft, it's about being strong on the right things and soft on other things. And the way I divide it up is I kind of came to a realization that as an organization and as a person, I watched it in myself, but I watched organizations I work with doing this. What I observed was we were being very strong on the outside and what I call the front. Very tough, very aggressive, very positional, very dug in about certain things. And that wasn't working. The thing is, when you pushed away often at that, on the inside, on the core of who we were very soft. Oh. So if a client didn't understand why we were being so aggressive and they pushed away, often we'd just crumble as an organisation. There was no backup to that aggressiveness. It was a kind of tanks on the lawn thing, but there wasn't any real thinking and philosophy and an understanding of why we were taking that position behind it. My point is I think it's the wrong way around. So the book is about how we develop a strong core. So you can be strong at heart, in the centre. It's a bit like Pilates would give you a strong backbone. But you can then be soft up front in the way you engage with the rest of the world, in the way that you listen, in the way you approach things, in your flexibility. So it's not just about being soft and giving all the time. I think if you give, you will come unstuck. It's about giving and taking in the right measure. And it's about a balance between those two things.
Right.
And it's about where to stress each.
Right. And that's very interesting. And I like to focus on something that you said a bit earlier on. And that's kind of the very hard and unwavering approach that a lot of people end up taking at the beginning, or ends up being their default position before really realizing what they're getting themselves into. Why do so many people approach business this way and then they end up being unsuccessful?
That is the million-dollar question. It's also a question I'm exploring in the book I'm now doing, which is the follow-up. I think we live with a framework around us, which is a belief that strength is the thing, that as primarily we've taken a model from the predators, from the animals that are predators. We've had to take a stance as a species, and we have a very predatory way of thinking. And that form of power is a framework that it's kind of like a fish swimming in water. The fish doesn't see the water.
Right.
And that framework we're largely blind to. So what I'm starting to do is question that framework and say, do we realise the extent to which this narrative of how we do things and how we approach problems is influencing our strategies in many different places, not just in negotiation? It's influencing our approach to diversity. It's influencing our approach to leadership. And I think that's something we're very much wrestling with now. But I think what stops us from addressing was a whole variety of things, including habit. But it also includes the things that we're truly scared of. There's a lot here about fear, because one of the reasons we put up a strong front and we can be very reactive and defensive is that there are things that we're not prepared to often acknowledge that scare us. And those can be things like uncertainty. They can be quite unconventional.
Quite a common biological reaction in general, fearing the unknown.
Yeah. And fear is something we have as a sort of inherited thing from a long, long time ago in our history. We have things like imposter syndrome now, which cause a lot of executives to worry about being found out.
Hmm.
And we can get really strong feelings of stress and fear. But I don't think we always understand where those are coming from. And our fear is a complex structure and a complex subject. And I think that's, for me anyway, that's when I've investigated that, that's what's shown to be driving a lot of this feelings of the need to be strong, the feeling of the need to be certain, when really we don't know most of the time. Life is what happens. Life is what turns up. And so you see, I think we're at a point in time where the uncertainty culture and the improvisation culture is a coming, and we're struggling to embrace it for some good reasons.
Yeah, and let's talk a bit about negotiation and the negotiation process in particular.
Yeah.
Now, that's something that you've talked about extensively within the book, how to approach negotiation and how you can use the power of soft to do that. But what is the most important part when you're sitting down at a table and you're trying to negotiate?
For me, the trust.
Right.
I think if you don't have trust between the parties to any negotiation, your results are going to suffer. So for me, what essentially I'm doing is saying that rather than this being a game of logic and reason, that we have to fundamentally look at a variety of skills, a variety of things. And it's not just how we think, it's how we feel. So I've been in situations where the negotiation is going wrong and I'll be brought in and I'm asked, what can we do? And the expectation is that there's a rational, skill-based answer to that. We're failing to do, to investigate this or to see that. And simple questions like, how's the relationship? Do you think the other party trusts you? Do you understand them? Those are what's generally, for me, unlocked the truth of what really hasn't happened or needs to happen. I have one example where the negotiation had broken down and the client realised that what they really had to do was travel to the other party and to spend some time. They spent an afternoon and then an evening sitting down to eat, just rebuilding the relationship so that they trusted each other. Because without that trust, if you approach it from a purely logical perspective, what you start to realise is without that trust, the parties don't open up to each other. We don't share what's really worrying us and what's driving us. We don't share our needs. In the absence of safety, we're not creative. You know, we think back to when we're at our most relaxed as individuals. We'll probably have a time like we'll be swimming or we'll be in the shower.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be at home. We'll be somewhere comfortable and safe. And that's when we feel the absence of fear and the ability to be creative, you know, to sing in the shower. And I think that's why we find the scene in Psycho in the shower so scary, because it's somewhere that is fundamentally somewhere safe that is being attacked.
Yeah, and then and a Norman Bates out of nowhere comes out and kills you.
Yeah.
Spoilers for anyone not knowing, but... Come on, it's been a few years now.
It has been a while. It has been a while. But that contradiction between safety and fight flight is really scary, because they're opposite ends of the spectrum. And I think as in our lives, we spend a lot of time in what I call the amber area of the traffic light, if you like, of fight flight. We're not comfortable in many situations in commerce and at work. And in order to be creative, we need to be more relaxed. We need to feel a little bit of safety. And I think that's what the younger generation, the millennials, the culture nowadays is getting more attuned to. It's getting better at.
Yeah, and I think that feeds back into, especially talking about younger generations, is that when asked, well, what would you like from the workplace? What would make you more fulfilled? And they would always feed back to, well, I would want stability. I'd want to, you know, come into work and make sure that I don't have to fear, you know, the unknown, or fear losing my job perhaps, or have some sort of, you know, crazy probation period or anything like that. And once the screw is loosened a bit, people tend to perform better, not just in negotiation, but in general, where they don't have a looming cloud above their head.
Yep. I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, because you've given us a great context on something that a lot of people find very subconscious, and they can't explain, they can't really get into it, as, you know, you're going on daily life, you have so much going on, you're too busy doing the work, but this feeling persists, and you don't understand why. And it feeds into my next question, Hilary, and that's more for our listeners. So can you perhaps give us 3 tips on how we can start applying the power of soft in everyday life as we go into the office tomorrow morning?
Well, my first one follows on from what we just talked about. My first one is really very fundamental. It's to ask yourself, how good is the relationship? Because most of the problems I see in most negotiations stem from not having the trust, not having the relationship. So I have to start there. I have to ask about that. I have to ask about how we feel about the other person and how they might feel about us. and to ask ourselves, do they feel safe in my presence? You know, is this a welcome thing, this negotiation? Or, I mean, I once spent, I think, an hour and a half as leading a negotiation team in the reception area of a big supermarket. And they do that in order to make you feel uncomfortable. And wow. To feel that you are small and they are big and you can be dominated. And that to me is not helping the relationship, because as a supplier, if I'm going into that scenario and I'm not comfortable, I'm going to be more guarded. I'm not going to share my most creative ideas.
It could be even anger. It could escalate, right?
Yeah, it can get worse. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I can get angry, as you say. I could take offensive or defensive action. You know, and this is the frame of reference we all tend to fall into if we feel threatened. What do? Where do we go? And that's what we see a lot of negotiations. We don't see creativity because we don't have safety and we don't have a good relationship. And I fundamentally think negotiation is a creative process. It's not a logical set of do this, do that. It's a creative process where both parties have to bring not only their individual creativity, but their collective creativity. Because we need to be collectively creative to build new things together.
Yeah, and that's very interesting, because you often hear, you know, statements like, well, Group X is very logic and reason orientated, and this side of their brain works that way. Then you have a creative, you know, type of person on the other end, and they work this way, and these people manage this. But it's very interesting, as you say, is when you put the two together, when you actually apply every aspect without fear, without having trust issues with any other person for perhaps thinking slightly differently, then is when you have that real magic happen.
Yes. Yes. Well, as I said before, I'm just not a believer in those sort of polarities.
Right, right.
I think we're all human, weirdly. and I think we share fundamentally the same interests.
Great.
So the second tip would be, I think we do a lot about listening. I think without listening, without good listening, negotiation is impossible. And we try to be better at listening. We try to be better listeners. But my approach is kind of the other way around. My approach is to ask ourselves, what stops me listening? So I talk in the book about a series of characters I call the inner interrupters. And I think the problem a lot of the time is this: there's a sense in us, or there's a reason why we stop listening. You know, when someone's talking to us, we want to interrupt them because we think we've got a better answer, or we suddenly think of something, so we say that thing. There's a variety of reasons that we each carry, and I think we need to identify those. What stops me from being a good listener? Because I think most, particularly professional people, most lawyers, accountants, technical people, they wouldn't be any good at their jobs. They wouldn't be where they are if they weren't good listeners. It's not listening that's the problem. It's the bit that gets in the way of the expert, if you like, or the competitive person or the creative person who can't resist butting in. Their brain goes off on a flight of fancy, or they have to say something. And that's the problem. It's almost you have to sort of ask yourself, where's my strength here that's getting in the way of my skill? And for me, that's is a different way to ask ourselves about how we can be better listeners.
Great. And actually, that brings me on to a quote I remember all the way back from a philosophy book, which I cannot remember for the life of me, but that was, if you want to know more about something, and if you want to learn more about someone, the best question that you could possibly ask them is just, why, and tell me more. So these two things, and that's all you have to do, and then lean back and listen to what they say, because we often have our own biases and we assume certain things, let's say during a negotiation process, and we would say, well, you know, this person said statement X, which then obviously means that they mean something. And we completely missed the message and the point at the end.
I think the other thing to ask ourselves is, could I be wrong? Because we tend to think that we are right and the other person's wrong. And I'm not saying that you are wrong, but what I'm saying is that if you're not open to the possibility, why would the other person ever listen to you? Why would they bother with you? Because if you give the impression that you think you're right and you think they're wrong, which I probably doubt anyway, but if you give that impression, what reason have they got for listening? And just to ask yourself that. And just, if we can get ourselves, we tend to become very hard and fixed to a position over time. We might start off fluid and flexible, but we tend to get very rigid and positional as we move forward in any negotiation. And I think we always have to be open to that, getting back to flexibility and asking ourselves, well, you know, just as a thought, what if I'm wrong and what if they've got something valuable to say? Because that,
yeah,
I think, can unlock the ability to be able to listen and to be able to take things on board. Because at the end of the day, I know what I know. I know what I need. I know what my position might be. And what I don't know is why the other person has taken the position they have. Why do they believe that? Because they obviously do. So what's driving that? What's beneath that? And if I don't first question, could I be wrong, I'll never get there.
Yeah, great. It's some fantastic insight there and a lot for our listeners to mull over and think. And the last question I'd like to ask you is the one I ask anyone actually that comes on a podcast, and that's, what are you currently reading?
Yeah, I'm rereading a book I read in the early part of the millennium. It's Roger Deakin, his book Waterlog, about his journey. He swims in a series of different places across and around the British Isles. And I read it once, loved it, and I went to the bookshelf thinking I was looking for something else. And I saw this book and I realised, no, it's time I need to read that book again. And I'm getting a whole set of new insights. Not just... It's very much a bedtime book for me, because I have a book I might read during the day, but I enjoy reading it as words and poetry. But I also enjoy some of the metaphors and some of the thoughts. So Waterlog.
Great, really fantastic. And for our listeners, of course, we'll have a link in the description below where you can go and you can find out more about Waterlog as well. But with that, I would like to thank you very much for joining us today, Hilary. It's been great having you on.
My pleasure, Murray.
And of course, for those listening, if you enjoyed what we talked about today and you found our conversation to be enjoyable, there will be links again in the description below where you can find out more about the power of soft and, of course, Hilary, what he is up to and a lot of the work that he does as well. With that, I would like to thank you very much for joining us on this week's episode of Lit Radio. As usual, you can find us on our social media channels at Lit Radio, and we very much look forward to seeing you next week.